Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. Yesterday, we had a long talk about September 11th, now that the 9/11 Commission report has come out, and what that meant for Bush foreign policy. We talked about how the Bush is struggling mightily, and frankly, right-wing conservatives are struggling to try to find some connection between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, some meaningful connection where Saddam Hussein actually had an effect that harmed America, because they're still trying to justify the war. And, of course, all the other justifications failed, weapons of mass destruction, and their arguments about democracy really haven't succeeded. And so they've been looking for really any kind of tenuous connection. Of course, the 9/11 report shows that there are countries that do have ties to al-Qaeda, Afghanistan, prime among them. Also, Saudi Arabia, prime financing. And then the ties with Iran and Pakistan are far greater than any ties with Iraq. Indeed, as I argued on my show yesterday, the ties with the United States and al-Qaeda were stronger than the ties between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. In fact, Hussein and bin Laden didn't like each other, didn't like each other's organizations, didn't want to work together. They, in effect, were enemies. Just because both were bad people, evil people, doesn't mean they couldn't be enemies. Bad people, evil people, doesn't mean they couldn't be enemies. Recall Hitler and Stalin were friends and then enemies when Germany invaded Russia in 1941. So it's not surprising, in fact, that Osama bin Laden, who wants to install a theocracy, religious dictatorships across the Arab world, much as Iran wants to do, and Saddam Hussein, who had a secular dictatorship, one built on basically his own power, a cult of personality, they had different agendas. And in fact, when Osama bin Laden asked for help, Iraq said no. I want, though, to discuss today this problem in a much larger context. You kind of devote a little time to political philosophy here, and that may sound boring, but actually I think it's very interesting, because I think that we're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm not sure if there are technical problems or not, but we'll actually, I think it's very interesting, because I think that we're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm not sure if there are technical problems or not, but we'll forge ahead. We're talking about liberal internationalism. We're talking about the way, basically, people view foreign policy. Now, the conservatives, as I see it, they're divided into two camps. They're the isolationists, the people like Pat Buchanan, the people like the Republican Party between World War I and World War II, the ones that rejected Woodrow Wilson's League of Nations to join the United States in with the rest of the world. They tend to be the nativists, the people that don't like immigrants, the people that say America first, the people that really want a very white country, don't like the United States has become, you know, multicultural, things like that. And they're kind of on the wane, but there's definitely, you can see that sentiment in the Republican Party. I don't think that their ideology has much force today, but it's important to mention it. It's definitely out there. Why is that? Well, you could argue it's racism, but I don't think the conservatives are any more multicultural, things like that. And they're kind of on the wane, but there's definitely, you can see that sentiment in the Republican Party. I don't think that their ideology has much force today, but it's important to mention it. It's definitely out there. Why is that? Well, you could argue it's racism, but I don't think the conservatives are any more pro-Arab than they are pro-black. No, I think that it had to do with oil. It had to do with the fact that Iraq had something we wanted. And you got to remember, and it's not been disputed, that 10 days after George Bush became president on January 30th, 2001, according to Paul O'Neill's book, the former Treasury Secretary, Bush had a cabinet meeting and showed maps where Iraq was divided up into 10 separate oil fields for 10 separate companies. Now, it's interesting to me, this has never been refuted. It's never even been challenged by the Bush administration. They agree that they did this. And again, this sort of pragmatist ideology, right? It's all about oil. And so when liberals fell to contain Saddam, but obviously the UN did not vote to allow us to go to war, and so to say that we went to war on behalf of the UN, who the realist conservatives don't respect, any never even been challenged by the Bush administration. They agree that they did this, and again, this sort of pragmatist ideology, right? It's all about oil. And so when liberals spell to contain Saddam, but obviously the UN did not vote to allow us to go to war, and so to say that we went to war on behalf of the UN, who the realist conservatives don't respect anyway, is of course ridiculous. So again, I think then they say, what was about democracy? Which is really, I would argue, the liberal internationalist argument. That's our argument, if you will, the one that that they're making. And so the liberal argument, if you will, is that we care about democracy and human rights. So when the conservatives say, well, that's what matters, let's see if it does. And the best way to look at it is to compare it to other countries. So when the conservatives say, well, that's what matters, let's see if it does. And the best way to look at it is to compare it to other countries where you have human rights violations. Sudan. You have genocide going on right now in Sudan. I did a program on this, and virtually no one seems to notice or care that genocide is going on, just like... Sudan. You have genocide going on right now in Sudan. I did a program on this, and virtually no one seems to notice or care that genocide is going on, just like... Back here on The Scoop. I'm sorry, we've seen the Department of Peace, and we need to just stop all wars. Some would go so far, I don't think there are many, but some would go so far as to even say we shouldn't have invaded Afghanistan when they attacked us. But even the ones that support that invasion only support it because of a direct attack on us, and they would not support aiding democratic movements abroad. They just think that America never does it well, and there's some argument to that. We've certainly failed many times. Though I would argue we've succeeded many times. I'll get to that in a minute. And it based on that's okay. Call in. Let me know what you think. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Again, I apologize. I know there have been some technical difficulties, but I think we're doing good now. 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The war in Iraq has provided doctors with something they don't normally see. A huge number of young, healthy Americans with devastating injuries. For every soldier killed in combat, many more are injured, losing an arm, leg, or multiple limbs. At Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., doctors have fit more than 100 soldiers with technologically sophisticated artificial limbs, some costing as much as $150,000. Congress is expected to approve $10 million for construction of a new amputee care center at Walter Reed Hospital.
The success of the United Auto Workers when it comes to unionizing Japanese car factories in America has been less than stellar, but hopefully with a nudge from their counterparts in Japan, more progress can be made. The president of Japan's largest auto workers union says he's recently begun pressuring Japan's largest automakers, including Nissan and Toyota, to lessen their resistance to union organizing drives at U.S. factories. The UAW will still fight an uphill battle at many plants, though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage...
...though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage for U.S. workers hasn't risen for 7 years, since it became $5.15 per hour in 1997. Kerry told invited attendees at Northern Virginia Community College raising the minimum wage would give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough to give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough extra money to buy 10 months worth of groceries.
The results of a preliminary investigation by the Acting Inspector General of the U.S. Treasury accuse IBM of manipulating government data in a policy debate over pension. IBM lobbyists allegedly circulated a list of talking points against legislation that would have prevented companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they changed their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on... companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they change their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on...
I'm suffering from Reagan exhaustion. Greek gods did not get the glorification that Ronald Reagan has been getting since his death. He's already gotten a king-like seven-day funeral and a tsunami of worshipful media coverage. And now, the full deification of the Gipper is proceeding apace, with Republican politicos openly engaged in idolatry. From Ronnie's tenure. In idolatry. From Ronnie's tenure. James Watt, ketchup as a vegetable, Star Wars, a tax credit for segregated Bob Jones University, the SNL scandal, trees cause pollution, Grenada, William Casey, union busting, trickle-down economics, CIA sponsorship of Muslim radicals in Afghanistan, including one Osama bin Laden, Ed Meese, extensive cuts in programs serving poor people.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about liberal internationalism. We're talking about foreign policy and the differences between not just Bush and Kerry, but much as for the way it was conducted. They write, the Bush administration does not understand the world and remains unable to handle in either style or substance the responsibilities of global leadership. These former ambassadors, four-star generals, and including, by the way, a lot of Republicans. It's a bipartisan statement. Admiral Wilson Crowe, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under President Ronald Reagan, General Joseph P. Hoare, who led U.S. forces in the Middle East under George H.W. Bush, under Bush Sr. They said, our security has been weakened. Never in the 2 1/4 centuries of our history has the United States been so weakened. Never in the 2 1/4 centuries of our history has the United States been so isolated among the nations, so broadly feared and distrusted. Again, never in the 2 1/4 centuries of our history has the United States been so isolated among the nations, so broadly feared and distrusted, this bipartisan group said, called Diplomats and Military Commanders for Change. Including former ambassadors to the Soviet Union, former director of the CIA, former ambassadors to Israel, Pakistan. They said that once, of course, the 9/11 Commission found no credible evidence that Saddam Hussein worked with al-Qaeda, that Bush has been involved in a cynical campaign still to persuade the public that Saddam Hussein was linked to al-Qaeda and the attacks on September 11th. They include even the chairman. That, in essence, is the difference, as I see it, between the conservative internationalists and the liberal ones, the people that I support. The difference between people who go into the world, as Henry Kissinger did, and try to remake it in our image, try to, bomb anyone down to submission, the secret bombings of Cambodia and everything and that Henry Kissinger did, and force the world to give up its oil to us, give up its...
And we'd like to be a small part of your team. After all, while you may be carrying around the weight of the American economy, you shouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting by yourself. Join the club, Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Now, we've had some internet troubles here with the internet broadcast. I apologize for that. The radio broadcast is still going on. And I want to encourage you to call in. I appreciate your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. I don't know how much of this you folks on the internet have heard. But we're talking about liberal internationalism. We're talking about the difference, if you will, between liberals who say we need to be involved, we need to help promote human rights and democracy, and those that say, hey, we just need to go home and that we need to better spend our money at home. And I think there's an argument for that. There's no question about it. There's also an argument that the United States has messed up virtually every international thing we tried to do. I think we've messed up a lot, but I would argue we haven't messed up everything entirely. But I would say there is a huge difference between the liberal internationalists, people like Al Gore, by the way, and Bill Clinton, who believe we should be involved in the world, but also should be supporting human rights and democracy, and the conservative internationalists who claim to support democracy, but really it's all about oil. It's all about natural resources. And again, if anyone doubts that, all you have to do is look at the Bush administration, right? I mean, they are they don't care about Sudan. They don't care about Haiti. They don't care about Liberia. They do care, though, about three wonderful African countries: Angola, Gabon, and Equatorial Guinea. Why? Well, let's talk about those. We've got Angola, which is Africa's second largest oil producer. Nigeria's first, and Nigeria is more democratic than the others, so I'm not complaining about that. But in Angola, you had the president, José Eduardo dos Santos, who met Bush twice in the Oval Office, which is unusual for an African country. It's even more unusual because Bush has said that he will reward only the African countries that, quote, invest in the health and education of their people. Corrupt regimes that give nothing to their people deserve nothing from us, unquote. Now, that is good liberal international rhetoric, great rhetoric. If it were true, I would support it. Of course, it's not true. Human Rights estimates that between 1997 and 2002, 9% of Angola's gross domestic product, okay, 9% of the entire Angolan economy is missing. In other words, Dos Santos has helped himself to almost one-tenth of the entire economy of Angola. But he gets to meet twice with George Bush, and in fact he goes to dinners sponsored by ExxonMobil and Chevron Texaco. Obviously Bush doesn't care much about true democracy. What he cares about is people who provide oil. The same is true in Gabon. The same is true in Equatorial Guinea. Gabon is the third largest oil producer, and the head of Gabon has been in power 37 years, kind of the elder statesman of African tyrants, as he's been called. And he, of course, also has a poor human rights record. The same is true with Equatorial Guinea. So the Bush administration speaks a good game, but they don't carry through in their game. They just care about places that have oil. They don't care about the ones that don't have oil. But what I'm saying is that there is a role for the liberal internationalists. There is a role for those of us that really do care about democracy and human rights. I don't think we should pack up and go home. I just think that we should go through with the rhetoric and treat it in reality. Anyway, I want to hear what you think. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your name? Where are you from?
Yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, I know I've been having some internet troubles there. I'm glad you were able to get through.
Yeah, I just called in so I could listen to the show.
Oh, really?
But
is it that bad you can't get on the internet at all?
You know, it was buffering so badly.
Yeah.
And then it just completely lost the connection, and then I couldn't get the connection, then it came back on again, but
yeah, I apologize. I know it's bad today, and I don't really know what's causing it. I'm just glad this doesn't happen too often. But, well, let me ask you, because I know, Gordon, you've called in a few times. You support a Department of Peace. You and I
HR 1673, folks.
Fair enough. You and I think disagree on this point, but let's have it out. I think that we're both good liberals. We both care about human rights and democracy. I think the United States has a role to play in the world to promote those things. I obviously was against the war in Iraq, and I think Bush is doing a lousy job. But I don't think we should give up entirely on the hope of promoting democracy and human rights in the world. Do you agree with me or disagree?
Well, I think it's about compassion and knowing the world and giving the world the compassionate face of America rather than being able to bomb the hell out of people.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that giving milk to lactose intolerant people either. It means knowing the culture.
Right.
And being able to interact with that culture, because war basically is dysfunctional culture clashes. And if we can deal with sympathetic way, that's not the right word.
No, but to do it with a human face, to do it in a way where we are respected around the globe.
And yeah, and I think Denis Kucinich's plan to have a Department of Peace which trains people to be conflict negotiators, so we don't have to have conflict all over the world. We can have solutions.
Well, I don't mind training people. I don't mind. In fact, there's no question we didn't have enough training. We went to Iraq. But I guess my question is about people like Denis Kucinich, and maybe you, Gordon, is whether, in effect, you're really pacifist. Would you say that there is never a just war, or would you agree with me that war is a last result, but it's still sometimes necessary?
War is finally a definition that we're in an insane situation, and we have to dig our way out. I mean, you know that I'm a combat Vietnam vet,
right.
So I know what war is about, and I know that once you're in it, you're just in it. It doesn't matter why you're there. The idea is, I know what war is about. And I know that once you're in it, you're just in it. It doesn't matter why you're there. The idea is to stop the firefight, stop the fighting somehow. And usually that means digging your way right through the ambush.
Gordon,
that means going straight ahead.
Let me ask you a question. Did you support our war in Afghanistan?
I supported getting rid of the people who dispatched that 911.
Okay.
I support getting Al Qaeda, and if that means going into Al Qaeda, into Afghanistan and rooting them out and pointing out and getting them, yeah, let's get them.
Well, then I don't know that you and I are that different, and that's good to hear. Because my fear is that some liberals have seen the awful mess that Bush has made in Iraq and have basically said, you know, go home, don't have troops anywhere, get out of the world. And that's what I was speaking against. But I don't
agree with how they conducted
the war. Oh, thanks for calling in, Gordon. I appreciate it. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. Are you able to hear me okay? What's your first name? Where are you from?
I'm Rod from New York.
Al from New York. Okay, I've been having some computer difficulties today.
Yeah, it's back online, by the way.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
So are you of my view that there...
Absolutely. I've said before, I'm totally aligned with what you're saying. I have a very, what I feel is a salient concern here is... We have 6 months after the so-called turnover to deal. I mean, what's going to happen in that time? We still have Bush to deal with, and I don't see it as a tenable peace or any kind of construction can go on while this guy's in office.
You know, actually, Alan, this gives me a good chance to throw out a trivia question to those that have managed to make it this far, and I'll ask you the question, and I'll give the answer at the end of the hour. What percentage of Iraqi people, according to a poll by our guys, by the Coalition Provisional Authority, all right, this is our people conducting the poll, what percentage of Iraqis want
peace or any kind of construction can go on while this guy's in office?
You know, actually, Alan, this gives me a good chance to throw out a trivia question to those that have managed to make it this far, and I'll ask you the question, and I'll give the answer at the end of the hour. What percentage of Iraqi people, according to a poll by our guys, by the Coalition Provisional Authority, all right, this is our people conducting the poll, what percentage of Iraqis want our troops there, American and coalition troops there? Of course, the coalition is basically just us in Britain. But how many people want these foreign troops on their soil? And what percentage of people believe that we are indeed liberators? Let me give you a guess. What do you think are the two percentages? What percentage of Iraqis, according to our poll conducted by our people, want us there? And what percentage believe we are indeed liberators? Got a guess?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, guess.
I'm sorry. I would hope it's split down the middle. Of course, the polls are very massageable.
Right,
that it's half of the people that were asked at least.
Okay, so I think we can't impose it. I think we can encourage it. We can set the stage for it. We can, you know, help elements in these countries that are democratic overthrow their own dictatorship governments. I support that, by the way, and I know some liberals don't. I support aiding democratic opposition to dictatorships.
And popular uprisings.
And popular uprisings, absolutely.
It's obviously not a nail to be hammered into a place. It's something that takes adults.
Well, yeah, and it's something that's
GW
subtle.
GW is not.
You can go too far. You don't want to help a popular uprising against a democratically elected government. I mean, that's what we tried with the Contras in the 1980s.
Right.
I understand we didn't like the Sandinistas, but they were elected. And unless and until they took power, without an election, we can't be overthrowing them. Frankly, that's how we got into this mess in the first place. Back in Iraq in the 1950s, we overthrew a democratically elected government, installed the Shah, and we're still suffering from that one.
We're too willing to go into the enemy of my enemy doctrine.
Well, we've been doing that. Right. Well, see, that to me is conservative internationalism. That's this pragmatist. That's, we've got to fight with the enemy of my enemy. So we support Iraq when it's fighting Iran, and then we support Iran when it's fighting Iraq, and then we end up supporting both of them, and now we're...
And then turn our back on everyone.
Right, and now we're creating an Iraq that will just be a satellite of Iran, I fear.
Right.
And, frankly, Al-Qaeda got its support largely by us helping the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union. For all the talk about Bush saying there are connections here between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, I wanted to say, Mr. Bush, there are more connections between Ronald Reagan and Al-Qaeda than Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. And that doesn't mean that Ronald Reagan intended 9/11. I wouldn't argue that. But it means that if you're just looking at connections, we gave arms and training to people that later joined Al-Qaeda. There's no question about it. We gave more arms and training to the leaders of Al-Qaeda than Saddam Hussein did.
And are turning our backs assisted in the rise of the Taliban.
That's exactly right. When we turn our backs in the world, because when we're so closely focused entirely on these realist goals, they're called. I don't like that term because I don't think it's very realist to be a realist. But this conservative internationalist, this idea that we're only going to go in if there's oil, but if they're just anarchy and they're just, harming women, we're not concerned with that. If we turn our back on it, that's when it comes to haunt us. And I would argue that the first liberal internationalist goal is, do you want to guess what country I think we should do something for right now, immediately?
I'd say Saudi Arabia.
Well, Saudi Arabia, I would agree with you, is very dangerous to us. And for that reason, we need to put a lot of pressure on Saudi Arabia. But I think the largest, really human rights crisis right now is going on in the Sudan. Not really talked about, but hundreds of thousands of black Africans have been killed by Arab Africans, and that continues to this day, and we're doing virtually nothing about it. And I think that – actually, I take that back. We're doing nothing about it, not virtually nothing. And I think that when that happens, the world looks at us and they say, well, America, you're all about oil and resources and imperialist. You're no different from any other great power in human history, that just tried to get resources, and therefore we're going to do the same. We're going to develop our own nuclear weapons, says Iran and North Korea. Hey, why shouldn't Japan do the same?
That's a race.
Right, because that's why America has it. If you turn these things around and you look at it the other way and you say, America, they've killed 8,000 to 10,000 Iraqi civilians. They've murdered dozens of Iraqis in U.S. prisons. And then we're so horrified by what happened to Robert Johnson, which was horrific, no question about it, a horrible act.
And it was meant to be horrific.
It was. And I don't want anyone to say I'm justifying that. There's no justification for that. But there's also no justification for our torture and killing of innocent Iraqis, and our torture and killing of mostly innocent Iraqis. I mean, it's one thing, I think, when you try to go I think Israel's had some of this problems in trying to target a terrorist, and there have been innocent people around. But we've just gone willy-nilly. I mean, 8,000 to 10,000 Iraqi civilians, you never see that on the U.S. news.
And this shunning of international treaties.
Well, that's another thing. You're absolutely right. Geneva Convention.
I don't know what to say, Mark, and then I'll get you back to your show. What's happening here is a real lack of the ability of people to recognize peace as a natural resource.
Yep.
People thrive in it.
Well,
maybe not arms builders, maybe not the oil companies,
yep,
but everyone else.
You know, I think you make a really good point, Al, and I'll
It's Rod anyway.
Oh, so it's Rod. I'm sorry. I thought you said it was Al.
No,
I apologize.
Rod from New York.
Hey, Rod.
It's okay.
No worries. I think you make a good point. I'm going to talk more after I hang up on you, but thanks
for
calling on my show. I think Rod makes a very good point. You know, war in the short term does help the economy. If you just look at pure economically, war in the short term does help the economy. World War II helped get us out of the Depression. There's no question that part of the recovery right now is caused by the Iraq War. But in the long term, it harms us. One of the reasons why we were so rich under Bill Clinton was because we weren't at war. One of the reasons why we had such trouble economically in the 1970s was because Lyndon Johnson, what did he do? He spent a ton of money on Vietnam, didn't raise taxes, and eventually that debt, that huge debt that had to be paid back, ruined our economy. And we're going to see the same thing happen on George W. Bush. And I think Rod is exactly right. There is a peace dividend. There is an advantage to being peaceful, an advantage economically, an advantage in terms of our values, an advantage in terms of what sets us straight and apart as Americans of getting the entire world involved. Again, I just want to see if anyone else wants to guess to the question of the Coalition Provisional Authority poll, our guys' poll in Iraq, that asked Iraqis what percentage want foreign troops there to help them, and what percentage view these foreign troops as liberators. Rod guessed 50% and 25%. I'm sorry to say it's much, much less. So I'll see if anyone else wants to call in and guess. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I also wanted to talk just briefly today, kind of finish up where I didn't finish up yesterday, about 9/11. You know, September 11th has become an icon. It's become a symbol in many, many ways. And what's interesting is when you take apart the symbol and you see that it's empty, that there's nothing there. All that's there is the fact that 3,000 Americans were murdered and the fact that Americans came together right after September 11th with a strong sense of patriotism and anger and wanting to fight it. And that's all true. But look at the rest of the iconography, the rest of the symbolism of 9/11, the same kind of thing they used to praise Ronald Reagan. You know, George Bush on the airplane. They're selling that, you know. They're selling that. If you give a contribution to the reelection campaign of George W. Bush, you can get pictures of him looking out the plane pensively on September 11th. But let's recall what really went on that day. The best way to recall it, I think, is to go out and see Michael Moore's movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, and watch George Bush when he's told about the second plane hitting the World Trade Center. He's told, and it's clear, by the way, then that it's a terrorist attack. I knew it was a terrorist attack. I suspect you did, too. Once both planes hit both trade centers, that's no accident. And he's reading to little children. And they're reading to him, and he sits for 7 minutes. And this, I think, is the most brilliant part of Moore's movie, which is going to come out Friday. He shows that for 7 minutes, George Bush sits there as the whole world is literally burning around him and just listening to kids read because he has no idea what to do. And I thought it was very interesting because after 7 minutes, an aide comes up to him and whispers in his ear, "Hey, don't you think you ought to do something?" And he walks out of the room. But it took someone to whisper in his ear. He didn't think enough. Now, I can understand, I guess, an ordinary person being paralyzed, but you'd think that someone, the President of the United States, would get up and do something. And then what does he do, of course? He goes on his airplane, and he doesn't go back to Washington, as I'm sure Bill Clinton would have done, but he hides over Louisiana and Nebraska. And Dick Cheney orders NORAD, orders our fighter pilots to shoot down commercial jets, which I think was the right decision. But it's interesting that Dick Cheney was doing the ordering. Now, they claim that he talked to Bush. That's disputed. I think that's one of the reasons why they had to testify together to get their story straight. But we clearly see a president that's not in charge and has people below him, you know, making all the decisions. And I think when you look at the iconography of September 11th, you look at the fact that Bush's rating in the polls, which was in the 40s, skyrocketed, that really represented American belief in America and in fighting back. But as people are learning the truth, I think we need to separate the reality from the myth of September 11th, just like we need to separate the reality of the myth from Bush's claims about supporting democracy abroad. I do support democracy abroad, support human rights. I think any liberal should. And I don't think that we should walk away from the rest of the world. But if you really want democracy, it means that the people decide. The people of that country decide. You cannot impose democracy. You have to let it grow from within. You can help it. You can aid it. Like a flower, right? You can help it grow. But you can't just sort of stick a flower in the ground, stem first, and expect it to grow from there. It doesn't work like that. And so if we really support democracy, we will help native movements there. And I guess it's no surprise to me that a president that wasn't elected by the American people has chosen a president in Iraq that wasn't elected by the Iraqi people. So in closing, I would just say, if you're a liberal, don't give up on the world. Don't give up on internationalism. There is a role for the United States to play. We've made many mistakes in the past, but I'm optimistic enough, I'm hopeful enough to think that we can still be a force for good in the world. This is Mark Levine, signing off.